The arrangements agreed to at the Camp David summit are to set the military stage for an horrendous incident to provoke war in the Middle East. The overall plan is an update of the one I described nearly 3 years ago in AUDIO LETTER 6 for November 1975. Here now is the full outline of the new American strategy for preemptive nuclear war against Russia. This terrible war plan, my friends, has nothing to do with preservation of our so-called national security. It is a last-ditch Rockefeller blueprint for national suicide. First, the Camp David summit is to set the stage for Middle East war, while seeming to do the opposite. Then, as soon as the special American forces are in position for their strikes against the Russian space triad, a major incident will poison the Middle East peace atmosphere overnight. One option involves the Sinai, but other options are also being prepared. But regardless of the details of the incident, it will be staged in such a way that the finger of guilt will point toward Saudi Arabia. Tensions will build fast, and with them American public opinion against Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, the Rockefeller propaganda machine will excite fears that somehow the Soviet Union is preparing to move full blast in the Middle East. There will be additional incidents and clashes, and the very existence of Israel will appear to be at stake. At the same time, Americans will be reminded of the key role of Israel as a military ally in the Middle East. American public opinion will be inflamed with fear for Israel, anger at Saudi Arabia, and a desire to get tough with Russia. And then it will happen. In the world's first limited nuclear strike, Saudi Arabia will be brought to her knees at a single blow. The wellheads of Saudi Arabia's mammoth oil fields will vanish in nuclear fireballs. Desert sand will fuse into radioactive glass, capping off the oil wells. Radioactivity will prevent reopening the wells for at least 10 years, according to CIA estimates. The world will be badly shaken by witnessing this first use of tactical nuclear weapons. But the Rockefeller propaganda machine will paint it in the best possible light, drawing upon the carefully constructed image of Saudi Arabia as a threat to Israel's existence. It will even be said that the short, decisive attack on the oil fields was a relatively humane act, having spared Saudi population centers. In this way, nuclear warfare will begin to be domesticated in our minds and unthinkable no longer. The cutoff of Saudi Arabian oil will trigger gas rationing in the United States and severe dislocations in Europe and Japan. This will provide an excuse for Jimmy Carter to declare a national emergency as the United States secretly prepares to go to war. Jimmy Carter's energy crisis, that is, the moral equivalent of war, will be manipulated into reality. Across the Persian Gulf from Saudi Arabia, Iran will react to the oil field raid by going on a full-scale nationwide alert. The Shah will point to the serious rioting of late, which has an anti-Western flavor. He will point to ominous behavior by the Soviet Union, and he will raise the specter of a Russian attack on Iran like the American-Israeli attack on Saudi Arabia. With Saudi Arabia gone, Iran will be America's largest remaining source of Middle East oil. With gas rationing already underway by then, Americans will find the Shah's warnings very frightening. The Shah will publicly remind Washington of the, quote, total United States commitment to come to Iran's aid in an emergency, unquote, which was announced last November 16, 1977. The American public will demand that it is time for the United States to stand up to Russia, and with full public support, American troops and weapons will pour into Iran. From that point onward, the outbreak of nuclear war I will be all but impossible for the public to follow by way of the so-called news. Incidents and clashes will condition the American public to the increasingly aggressive behavior of Russia. We will hear more and more about civil defense, especially about plans to evacuate our cities in the event of war. But when it happens, all who have trusted the United States government and the major media will be caught completely by surprise. It will begin, according to the American First Strike strategy, with the surprise attacks against the Russian space triad. The attacks against the 4 Cosmodromes and the 2 Cosmosphere installations are to be timed so that they all occur simultaneously. Then the all-out American nuclear follow-up attack will be launched. Special preparations are underway now to make this follow-up attack on Russia more effective and to evade the Soviet defense system as much as possible. For example, America's fleet of giant Titan II ICBMs are being modified for fractional orbital bombardment by Martin Marietta, the Titan's manufacturer. This work is being financed through a number of secret avenues. One example is the $32 million contract from NASA to build a rescue rocket for Skylab, which of course no longer exists. Only 3 days ago, a freshly modified Titan II near Rock, Kansas attracted nationwide attention due to an accident that occurred just after it was reinstalled in its silo. When it was being reloaded with propellants, a leak sent poisonous reddish fumes towering into the sky. Another factor in the follow-up American nuclear attack is to be high-power laser weapons in 2 ways. The first way has to do with our ICBMs. Floating over all American ICBM installations today are Soviet Cosmospheres. They are there in order to blast our ICBMs at the moment of launch using their charged particle beam weapons. But one of the secret American weapons programs to which I have referred in recent months is the laser program. Some time ago, laser scientists solved a major technical problem in high-power laser weapons. Called thermal blooming, this problem made lasers relatively ineffective when fired within the atmosphere. But now, high-power lasers are being deployed near our major ICBM bases. Just before the missiles are launched, these lasers will be used, if possible, to shoot down the threatening cosmospheres. Then the missiles will be launched at Russia. The other role of lasers in the coming war is to involve the Moon. Our secret rulers know very well that the destruction of Russia's cosmodromes will trigger a furious counterattack. And in particular, the lunar particle beam bases are certain to start blasting American targets on Earth in an all-out attack. In order to at least reduce the damage which the Moon will be able to inflict, several extremely high-power lasers are now deployed on CIA-controlled ships at sea. Their job is to fire at the 7 Russian bases on the near side of the Moon, knocking out or damaging as many as possible. Thus, a beam weapons battle is shaping up for the early moments of nuclear war I between the Earth and the Moon. It will be the Earth-bound mobile lasers of the United States pitted against the charged particle beam weapons of Soviet Russia on the Moon. The American lasers are no match for the Russian particle beams, but our secret rulers view this as a way to cut their losses. Even if only part of the Moon bases are silenced by lasers, they will reduce the damage that can be inflicted by the others while their supplies are running out. When the American First Strike takes place, these are the things that are planned. But for those of us sitting at home when the air raid sirens begin to blare, none of this will be apparent. All we will know is that suddenly the unthinkable is happening. We are under nuclear attack. At the same time, Russians will be experiencing the same thing, but with one major difference. They have been provided with a network of civil defense blast shelters that will save many of their lives. You and I have not. Topic number 2. The American First Strike plan is a last-ditch attempt by our secret rulers to snatch not victory, but mere stalemate from the jaws of defeat. Even at that, The plan will fail if any part of the Russian space triad survives intact. And our secret rulers are closing their eyes to fatal flaws in the entire strategy. These flaws are so major that the Kremlin now plans to permit early parts of the plan to be carried out. Because in this way, our secret rulers will give Russia the perfect excuse for her own crushing first strike against America. In AUDIO LETTER 33 4 months ago, I revealed that the Kremlin is clearing the decks to go to war. In this, the Russians want to get several major matters taken care of before nuclear war I, so that America can be smashed at minimum cost to Russia. The Politburo committed Russia to a definite countdown toward war on April 22, 1978, as I revealed in AUDIO LETTER 33. The major objectives in this countdown are still as I told you then, and progress is being made rapidly on them all. First is the matter of conditioning the Russian people for war. This task has already been carried a long way. The Pravda warning, which I quoted last month about the cliffs of confrontation, is but one example. The second major objective is for the completion of the invasion preparations in Canada and Mexico. I first described these to you 5 months ago in AUDIO LETTER 32. Earlier this summer in June, the process was speeded up in Canada after Canada expelled all United States fishing vessels from her waters. And in Mexico, Russian troops and equipment, including tanks and neutron bombs, are being funneled in through the Yucatan Peninsula. The third major objective in the Russian war countdown has to do with Red China. Before war comes with America, Russia must neutralize China as a threat, one way or another. And now that China is intended by the Rockefellers to play a role in the American First Strike plan, China has become a top priority item on the Kremlin agenda. In connection with the American First Strike plan, which has been known within the Kremlin since early June, Russia has also singled out Norway and Iran for special attention. Since June 29, Russian intelligence ships of various types have been repeatedly stopping in Norwegian territorial waters off northern Norway. They are scouting out the staging area from which American subcraft will be launched to attack the Plesetsk Cosmodrome. And in Iran, anti-Western rioting is now seriously threatening the Shah's control over the country. Should he be toppled from power in an anti-Western coup or revolt, Iran will be lost as an asset in the American First Strike plan. The door to attack on three of Russia's four cosmodromes would be closed. But Iran and Norway are small potatoes compared to China. For the short term, Russia wants to protect her cosmosphere installations by denying American access to China's crucial Xinjiang province. But more than that, the new Asian axis is in gestation, about which I warned 5 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. Earlier this month, on August 12, 1978, Japan and China did sign the Treaty of Friendship and Cooperation, about which I reminded you last month. And Japan did succeed in obtaining the auxiliary clause I described last month. It states in effect that the treaty is not directed against Russia. Japan is becoming the pivot of the new Asian axis, but the focus is now on China. Right now, Russia is holding out both the carrot and the stick to China. The carrot is the promise that if China will align herself with Russia, China will share in the fruits of Russia's still growing power. The stick is the threat that if China does not abandon her anti-Russian politics, she will be in deep, deep trouble militarily. To drive home this point, Soviet encirclement of China with Soviet client states is continuing. Recently, for example, Vietnam has been increasingly belligerent toward Red China, and even border fighting has taken place in the past several days. And Laos and Afghanistan are both receiving huge stores of arms from Russia. Verbal abuse between Moscow and Peking is going on as usual right now, but Chairman Hua's unprecedented trip this month from China to Romania and Yugoslavia tells the real story. It all began last May when Premier Ceausescu of Romania went to China and received a tumultuous welcome there. Ceausescu, my friends, has been portrayed in news reports in America as a sort of fence-setter in the Soviet orbit, but that's not correct. He is Russia's ace go-between in sensitive dealings with other countries. In Peking last May, Ceausescu conveyed Russian overtures for a reconciliation to Chairman Hua. This led to Hua's follow-up trip this month to Romania, plus Yugoslavia and Iran. Last month, on July 13, China sent a clear signal to the Kremlin, indicating interest in Russia's overtures. On that date, China severed her long-standing ties with Albania, which is strongly anti-Russian. Scarcely a month later, on August 16, Hua arrived in Bucharest, Romania, a Russian satellite. Meanwhile, Ceausescu had visited Leonid Brezhnev No. 2 in the Crimea in order to find out what to say to Hua. While Hua was in Romania, he was greeted warmly by the Russian ambassador to Romania at a reception, contrary to news reports in the United States, and Romania agreed to give China a consulate on the Black Sea. From there, the Chinese will be able to observe movements of Russia's Black Sea naval fleet. This is intended as a gesture of good faith by Russia to China. When Hua left Romania, he went next to Yugoslavia. The reason for his visit reflects the increasingly similar thinking about some things by the Russian and Chinese ruling circles. I mentioned last month that those who run Russia today have accepted the verdict that socialism is not workable and that already collectivized agriculture is being phased out. Hua's interest in Yugoslavia, in a parallel vein, was to study the Yugoslav factory worker self-management system, free from political central committee controls. My friends, the tug of war between Russia and the United States over China is intensifying, but with every passing day it becomes more certain that Russia will win in this contest. The truth has to be faced. Once Russia and China are teamed up once again, the new Asian axis will spring into being almost overnight, because Japan, the third leg of the axis, has already been striving for good relations with both of the other powers. The new Asian axis will be cemented by more than racial ties and economic benefits. They all share a unifying drive for revenge against the United States and the West. For untold suffering on their part during the past 80 years, they intend to repay us double. With China in hand, Russia will be ready to set her own first strike plan in motion. First, she will allow our secret rulers to begin the war sequence, whether in the Middle East or elsewhere. In this way, the Kremlin will be able to rally the Russian people completely for war. Meanwhile, if the Russian overtures to China now underway are successful, Chinese troops will join the primarily Asian Soviet invasion forces in Canada and Mexico. Without the Asian expertise of their late brother John D. III, the three remaining Rockefeller brothers will discover too late that they have lost China to Russia. Without China, the cosmosphere leg of the Russian space triad will be safe from the American first strike, and the plan will fail. In the end, even the attack on the Cosmodromes will be partially thwarted, but our secret rulers will go ahead with this final kamikaze plan. But even before the Middle East erupts, the Kremlin plans to start increasing the pressure on America by means of geophysical warfare, including both weather manipulation and artificial earthquakes. Right now, America's weather is being tortured by our own secret rulers. They are using the coastal weather control grids I told you about 3 months ago in AUDIO LETTER 34. This is being done in order to create deliberate food shortages, to help in controlling you and me through the old Bolshevik weapon of hunger. It is also being done in order to ruin thousands of American farmers. In this way, Their land can be grabbed up in the corporate collectivizing of agriculture now underway here in the United States. At this very moment, in fact, the Rockefeller Weather Control grids are being used in an attempt to bring on widespread killer weather patterns. If they succeed, great masses of corn, soybeans, and certain feed grains will be wiped out. But the Russian weather modification by means of their cosmospheres planned for this winter will not be economic but military in its objectives. As for the artificial earthquakes, that has already begun. In AUDIO LETTER 24 from May 1977, I gave the locations of 7 Russian superbombs planted deep in the ocean trenches around the Philippines. Since then, I have also made public the Russian program of planting and detonating powerful cobalt bombs undersea around the Pacific Rim. These have produced numerous earthquakes, increasing the stresses in the earth around the Philippines. When the stresses are high enough, the super bombs will be set off to devastate the Philippines and shake the whole Pacific Rim, the Ring of Fire. Those stresses are nearing the critical point now. 3 months ago, the long, silent Mayon volcano in the Philippines began erupting. And late last month, the nearby Bulusan volcano began a spectacular eruption after a silence of 56 years. As I explained in AUDIO LETTER 24, the earthquake catastrophe to come in the Philippines is intended also to devastate America's west coast, and the Russians are leaving nothing to chance. At least 9 cobalt bombs with varying yields have now been planted in the vicinity of the San Andreas Fault. They stretch from the north end of the Gulf of California to a point about 40 miles west of Point Delgada in Northern California. Several of these are inland, one in the Salton Sea northeast of San Diego, one in an abandoned mine shaft 3 miles southeast of Palmdale, and one in the San Luis Reservoir southeast of San Jose. There is also a very powerful cobalt bomb now in San Pablo Bay, northeast of San Francisco. Should it be set off in such shallow waters, the entire area will be blanketed by deadly radiation for a generation. 2 weeks ago today, on August 13, one of the other bombs was set off. It was in the ocean 7.5 miles south of Santa Barbara. Some people heard what they described as a powerful explosion, followed shortly after by the earthquake itself. And one eyewitness in the mountains who happened to be looking in that direction described what he saw. Quote, "There was a great huge spout of water. It rose up and then fell back. The quake came right after that." Unquote. The next day, the National Security Council held a crisis meeting. The decision was made to play down the Santa Barbara incident because America is not yet ready to go to war. Topic number 3. My friends, for 200 years and more, the shores of America have promised haven to refugees from all over the world. But now, the United States has thrown away her unique heritage. The American dream is ending in a nightmare. And for the very first time ever, the era of the American refugee is dawning. We will be refugees from economic oppression, from hunger, from war, and from Bolshevik revolution. For 80 years, beginning at the time of the Spanish-American War, the United States has been selling her soul step by step. Our secret rulers have caused needless suffering, tragedy, and death on a scale that has no precedent in all of human history. And yet, with only scattered exceptions, we the American people have blinded ourselves and accepted all that has happened. In this way, we have made ourselves party to the satanic actions of the Rockefeller cartel, and we will surely pay the price. Today, everyone is wondering why the dollar is dying. American tourists overseas are finding that the so-called almighty dollar is becoming a powerless midget. When interviewed by television reporters, they say things like, quote, "Is there something going on in the States that I don't know about?" Unquote. 5 years ago, when something could still have been done about it, my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, was published. It told in detail what was coming, why, and who was responsible. But 5 years ago, no one was hurting yet, so the American people relaxed and did nothing. Today, everyone can see it happening, but now it's too late to save our economy. So now American economic refugees are beginning to do the only thing they can do for themselves and their families. They are fleeing from the dollar and even from America itself. By the same token, the advance information I have made public about hunger due to weather control and about the coming Bolshevik Revolution is generally being ignored now. People are not hurting yet, so why think about such things? But when it happens, those who succeed in escaping will be among history's most pathetic refugees. But worst of all, nuclear war one is looming. Here too the chances for preventing disaster have been forfeited. Therefore, my friends, my advice to all who will listen is to make serious preparations to leave the United States, if you can possibly do so. And before you say, "I can't do that," please think very hard. On the day that nuclear fireballs and Asian armies sweep across our land, will you suddenly realize that you could have left if you only had tried? Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.